Hello, and welcome to the Anti-Fragile Tarot Podcast. This is your resident card slinger, Susanna, with December's first episode. I can't believe that the year is already almost over. And it's really a time for me to reflect on a lot of the things that have gone on in the last couple of years. You know, as many of you know, I'm a very busy person, and it's definitely been a struggle to get this podcast out the way I'd like to. But I am committing to making a better effort in 2020. See, it's already started. I already don't know what year it is. The worst. So in 2020, I'll be doing that. The big thing I would like to point out, my awesome Discord admin and overall heckin' amazing patron, Ari, is responsible for a great Google form that he created so you can give me ideas for the podcast that you'd like to hear about. I am actually recording one of those right now. So when I get this form, it doesn't tell me who suggested it, but I have a suggestion from someone to cover cultural appropriation and witchcraft, the occult, the metaphysical, in both aesthetics and practice. This is something I think I've definitely touched on, you know, very obliquely in a lot of episodes. I haven't fully gone into cultural appropriation in, we're just going to say the occult, in witchcraft worlds. You know, it's something that I think I've made pretty clear I really do try to stay away from. I try to stay in my own lane. I try not to mess with systems that aren't mine. But, you know, we do have to give it some actual talking space and some actual room. And we all need to participate in this discussion. So I do want to preface this with the fact that I primarily read as white. I am Jewish. I have Mexican heritage. But I have a lot of white privilege. It's very conditional privilege, but it's privilege all the same. So I definitely suggest that you seek out other sources for this topic. It's definitely worth looking at tarot readers and astrologists and practitioners in general who are not white, who are black and brown and Asian and anything that you can think of. Because it's important that we all participate in this discussion, white people, non-white people. But you know, I don't want to boost my own words above anyone else's. I'm just trying to use the platform that I have to its best use. So, all right, I have a lot of feelings on this. It is undeniable that there is a lot of cultural appropriation in witchcraft. Now, what do I mean by cultural appropriation? You might have heard this term. I know that my podcast space is pretty wide, so some of you are probably tired of the phrase, and some of you may have heard it and really have no idea what it means, and you might be kind of afraid of it, or you might think it's stupid. So let's get some definitions out of the way here. Cultural appropriation is, I mean, it's a multifaceted thing, right? The biggest concerns with cultural appropriation are who is benefiting in what way from the aspects of a particular culture that are being used. Using influences from other cultures is not necessarily appropriation, but it really depends. Are you selling a class or an object from a culture that's not your own? Are you positing yourself as an expert? And if you are, why? What is making you an expert on it? You know, it is possible to have studied something, but you really need to tread carefully there if what you're talking about is not something that belongs to you. Now, not everything that is from a culture necessarily belongs to every individual person in it. I mean, it can belong to them if they so choose, if they engage in it. But it's reductive to assume that because someone is of a certain culture that they know everything about that culture and about practices. You know, looking at someone and assuming that they know anything about a particular in and out of their culture is problematic in a lot of ways. It takes away individuals. It kind of makes people spokespeople of a culture, which they may or may not be. And it also erases the fact that a lot of cultural practices are discouraged by whiteness. A lot of it is, you know, sometimes it's simultaneously seen as cool and other. Sometimes it's just seen as weird. So, you know, we have to be careful with that kind of thing. Now, I will say a few things that cultural appropriation is not. Again, not every use of something from a different culture is appropriation. Participating in a cultural or religious rite that you've been invited to attend, even if you are not of that culture or religion, is not appropriation. For example, I host a Passover Seder or I have my friends over for Hanukkah, and them participating in those things is not appropriation. You also can't really appropriate something that doesn't belong to anybody. You know, there's a lot of chatter in the witchcraft world about, you know, oh, all the Christian holidays are just Wiccan holidays and it's offensive. And it's not quite right. I mean, yes, a lot of our established practices and such for a lot of holidays, a lot of Christian holidays in particular, are based on some pagan rituals because it was a way to get people to participate in Christianity who were otherwise resistant. It's like, oh, look, we can incorporate this part of what you already do into this thing. Isn't that great? Don't you want to join us? I mean, it's really a lot more damaging and dangerous than that, but that's kind of the gist of it. And you also have people who have assimilated into a culture or have assimilated into a religion. And there are people who have very different views on that. I have some friends who feel very strongly that nobody who is not of African descent can be initiated into an African traditional religion. I have other friends who feel that if someone is called strongly enough, they can be. This is not my wheelhouse. I am not here to make any decisions on that because it's not my culture or religion to make that judgment. What I will say is if you feel very, very strongly about a particular religion that's tied to a culture that's very different from yours, I just think that it's worth examining what it is about it that is calling to you so strongly. And whether you can find some of that in a practice that is not traditionally closed to outsiders. It's something you really have to consider. And, you know, you shouldn't just find someone with an opinion that suits what you want and say, well, that's what they all think. Because, that's, again, really reductionist. You're not reducing people to being spokespeople of their cultures. That's not what we should be doing. And you can find anyone with any kind of take. We have the internet at our disposal. You can find literally every opinion and backup for it if you want. My own feelings on this, again, I personally try very hard not to step on particular toes. Like, I grew up in a very eclectic pagan household. And sometimes that was a good thing, and sometimes it was a little appropriative. And there's really some fine lines there. So, you know, you really have to consider your behavior and consider what is drawing you to something. And if you are looking at a practice that is historically tied to a particular culture, I cannot overemphasize the importance of looking for mentors and teachers and resources that are made by people from that culture. You know, finding a white shaman or a Christian Kabbalist is not what I think is a good practice. I think that if you're going to be doing a thing because you feel so strongly called to it, you need to do it the right way. So that's something to really think about as you navigate. Perhaps the biggest touchstone in cultural appropriation in witchcraft, which again, not everyone likes the term witchcraft, but we're just using it as an umbrella term here. The biggest touchstone that a lot of us have kind of touched base on at some point, or many of us have at least given thought to or seen arguments about, is the use of sage, white sage in particular, for smoke cleansing. Now, the reason that this is such a big deal is because Indigenous Americans got a really bad freaking deal when they were colonized. And there's a really horrific history of forced assimilation and this destruction of people and their sacred rights and their sacred lands and their plants that Indigenous Americans have really had to fight to preserve in any capacity. For example, you know, and for Thanksgiving, one thing I did, you know, I definitely participate in like the secular, you know, kind of the cultural, like, feel good family time of Thanksgiving. It's a nice excuse to eat and have a feast. But it's also important to research whose land are we on in America. And in New Jersey, that's Lenni Lenape land. So, you know, doing some research, directing some funds over to the preservation of the tribe that's still here. You know, horrifically reduced in numbers after genocide against Indigenous Americans, but still here. You know, a lot of the time we think about these Indigenous practices as old or not relevant anymore, but they are real live people still practicing them. So it is extremely relevant. So white sage is used by many Indigenous Americans in a particular form of smoke cleansing called smudging. And in, you know, neo-pagan New Age circles, that caught on big time. And smoke cleansing has been used for centuries, millennia probably, across all cultures. But the term smudging and the use of shells and white sage really, really caught on in a big way. And there's been a push in the last few years to maybe not call smoke cleansing of any kind smudging, unless it is a particular smudging ceremony performed by Indigenous people who use it as one of their sacred rites. And so, like, definitely don't call sage cleansing smudging. It's smoke cleansing. There's also a debate about whether or not to use sage at all. Now, this is where it gets tricky, right? We're talking about cultural appropriation. Remember what I said about who's benefiting? So there are conflicting reports on whether or not white sage is endangered. There's also the fact that there are a lot of Indigenous Americans and reservations that do harvest and sell white sage for mass consumption, not just for themselves. So there's definitely somewhat of a gray area there as far as who's selling the sage, where are you buying it from, is it endangering, et cetera, et cetera. There's also the fact that a lot of other cultures use sage. I have some Filipino friends who've used it for a long time. You know, it's not as cut and dry as some people view it is in one way or the other. You know, it's not like, oh, everything from the earth is for everyone to use. But sage in particular has definitely taken on a cachet and a wider use. Again, this is not something that I can decide because this is not something that affects me. But my suggestion there, you know, again, figure out what it is about sage that's super important to you. If you are using it and you are buying it, you know, consider it smoke cleansing, not smudging. And figure out if there's something else you can do. There's a lot of other plants you can use for smoke cleansing that don't have the same, you know, metaphysical problems to wrestle with. Bay leaves are a great thing to use. They're cheap. You can get them in the supermarket. They're small. So, you know, that's something to consider. You can look at other herbs that are used for cleansing and what's safe to burn. You can look at things that are particularly from your local area or from your culture, whether or not that's local to where you actually are physically located. So, you know, those are my suggestions for navigating that. And, you know, above all, just if someone is telling you that a way that you're practicing is disrespectful to them, don't let defensiveness be your immediate reaction. It may be the feeling that jumps out to you, but don't let it be what guides your conversation and what guides your actions. Really, really sit with it and listen to it and talk about it. I'm also not going to say that everyone who says that something is offensive is correct. There are definitely people who take offense to things that have nothing to do with appropriation. They just don't like it. And people do use it as a buzzword. People do misunderstand it. Some people are just angry. You know, I'm not saying that every time someone says that's appropriative, you need to, you know, roll over and flagellate yourself and feel bad. Like, you know, actually sit with it. Really, really sit with it. Really give what someone is saying some thought and see how that goes for you. You know, do some research. Again, make sure your research is coming from people who are a part of that culture or where that practice is originating from. You know, don't just do something because everyone else around you says it's fine. But you also don't have to necessarily listen to everything every person says. Just use some sensitivity and use some common sense. And when in doubt, do some research. Be mindful of your sources. All right. The other thing that the person who wrote in, and I have no idea who sends me these. So if you want to tell me who you are in the comments, if you're replying to my Google Doc, you can. But, you know, obviously these can be anonymous as well. So they asked me to talk about aesthetics. Now, this is a very, very interesting one. And I'm going to veer off of cultural appropriation a little bit. I mean, we're going to talk about that too. But I'm also just going to talk about some problematic things that happen with witchcraft aesthetics that aren't necessarily about cultural appropriation, but are about cultural insensitivity. All right, so one big thing with the appropriation, be mindful of what witchy aesthetics you're using and why. Something big that comes to mind is appropriating Romani imagery or stereotypes. You might be more familiar with the term gypsy. By many Romani people, this is considered a slur. Many people have also reclaimed it. You know, again, that's not something that I can give input on as someone who's not connected to that culture. But again, being mindful and sensitive goes a long way. So I personally use Romani unless someone has specifically asked me not to, which hasn't really happened yet. Something to note with that, when you're tempted to call someone out for using a particular thing like the G word for Romani, be mindful that because of stereotypes and because of forced assimilation and intermarriage or rape or however people have come to be, not everyone is going to necessarily look the part of their culture. I've definitely called people out for using the G word, and they're like, well, that is my heritage. And I'm like, oop, okay, sorry. I shouldn't have assumed off the bat. So just, you know, be mindful. If you know that someone is absolutely not, and they're using something in a really frankly obvious way, that's a different story. But we should be mindful of not making a lot of assumptions. You know, there are a lot of very white-passing, blonde Hispanic people who might be part of closed religions and closed practices. So you might think that they're just like a white interloper, but they're not. So again, just be mindful of any assumptions that you're making, because assuming that people must look a certain way to be part of a certain thing is also kind of racist. And again, I don't, it's easy for people to have this instinctive feeling like, oh my God, I'm not racist, you're calling me a bad person. No, we're all kind of racist. Every last one of us is kind of racist against people from races that are not our own. And it's stuff that we have to unpack and unlearn. But the point I was getting at is using Romani stereotypes is a big thing in witchcraft. I wrap my hair because I am Jewish. Usually, Jewish women start wrapping their hair after marriage if they're really observant. That's usually reserved for Orthodox people. But there is a more recent push to kind of reclaim it as a more cultural thing. A lot of unmarried Jewish women do it now as well. Again, it really depends on a lot of factors. It depends on personal choice. It depends on your community. I know there are, I'm in a lot of like hair wrapping groups since I started doing this a year ago. And there are women who have been wrapping their hair for years after they got married. And then when they divorced or their spouse died, they stopped wrapping their hair because in their community, if they continued to wrap their hair, they would still be viewed as married and it would be harder to find a spouse. This is not true for every community. again, people are not monoliths, but it is a fairly prevalent thing. I'm not the most religious Jewish person, but I'm definitely more culturally connected and more religiously involved than I used to be. So I decided to start wrapping my hair a year ago. I never intended to be full time. It stuck. I love doing it. I kind of hate my hair. It works out. It works for me. It's my choice. And I get to do that because it's my culture. But not only have I had a lot of people making assumptions about my level of religious involvement because of it, which is why I didn't do it for about a year after I realized I wanted to start doing it, but people make other weird assumptions about it. You know, when I have my hair wrapped and I mention I'm a tarot reader or I'm at my table, oh, you even look the part. You have a turban on. I don't even wear turban styles very often. Very rarely. And almost never when I'm reading tarot, partly for this reason. It's like, no, this is not a costume. I don't have things on my table purely for aesthetics that aren't also part of my practice. Like, yeah, I have crystals and I'm more into crystals as a thought exercise and an aesthetic than I am for like crystal healing. But, you know, I don't have crystal balls because I don't scry. And I don't wrap my hair because I'm trying to project an image. That's me. So, you know, if you are doing tarot readings and you don't normally wrap your hair, I would just be mindful, especially if you're doing anything that really looks like a turban. You know, a little like sash or headband on your head is sort of a gray area, but like you do you. You know, I'm not here to police what you put on your head. Again, I'm just saying be thoughtful and figure out what it is about a particular thing that is calling to you and why do you want to do it. Is it because you just like the aesthetic or is it because it's important to your practice? If it's just for the aesthetic, I would consider, you know, how much does this aesthetic harm people? A great example is white people wearing bindis from Hindu culture. Bindis are very religiously significant. They're beautiful. They're adorable. They're often very fashionable and, you know, paired with outfits. But people have also, A, people who are not even remotely from a Hindu perspective wear them for fashion. And B, this is harmful because a lot of Hindu people have experienced discrimination for wearing the, you know, symbols of their religion. Again, this is something that's harder for me given my life and my where I've lived and my outlook. A lot of this is stuff I haven't seen as much firsthand, and I definitely have Hindu friends who said that they haven't been persecuted, but you know, really think about it. Something I wrestle with myself, I have a large tattoo of the goddess Guanyin. She is a bodhisattva. She's also a Chinese folk goddess. And I am really glad that I decided not to get a tattoo of her on my foot. That was my initial plan. I was going to get a tattoo of her on my foot and Ganesh on my foot because they were deities that my parents followed. I'm really glad I didn't get them on my feet because feet are considered dirty. And that would have been really, really disrespectful. I was thinking about this like 6-7 years ago. I've grown a lot in that time. That's also part of why I put it off because I wanted to do more research and I'm glad I did. But as a folk hero, and because Buddhism is also not a closed religion in that way, it's a little bit more understandable. Especially when I talk to people because Buddha tattoos are fairly common. But Kuan Yin is not as common. So when people recognize her, we often have a really great discussion and they're happy to see it. I've gotten nothing but positive comments on this tattoo. It's something I think about a lot, though. You know, I wonder if maybe I did make a mistake with that. But again, I gave it a lot of thought. I have a deep personal connection to Guan Yin. I go to her temple. I defer people back to resources by Chinese historians and folklorists. So, you know, again, this is where I'm saying you have to really think about why you're choosing what you're choosing. The other thing I wanted to touch on with this, besides not just co-opting aesthetics, like, oh, another thing, again, with African traditional religions, a lot of people kind of co-opt, like, the deities, the orishas. And there are probably lots of other terms that I don't know, so this is not comprehensive. But people often use those aesthetics for things like photo shoots or, you know, calling out aspects of them. And again, without the guidance of someone who's actually in that religion, someone who is telling you, like, you go to them for spiritual guidance and they're telling you to do something that's different. But just kind of up and doing it yourself for the aesthetic more than the meaning and more than the actual practice is disrespectful. But the thing I really wanted to touch on too is that the sort of new age modern occult is still overwhelmingly whitewashed. A lot of the aesthetics that are celebrated are pale and thin and ethereal and, you know, having a certain aesthetic about witchcraft, you know, candles and black clothes and hats and, you know, just a certain style that's almost like a goth style, you know? And don't get me wrong, this is my aesthetic. This is what I do. But it also really erases people who don't fit that aesthetic who still practice. I know lots of people who are mostly in jeans and t-shirts and are way better practitioners than I am. So, you know, I also know lots and lots of people who are not white and not straight. And, I mean, there is sort of a joke that, you know, every queer person is into astrology or witchcraft, but that's also not true. It's not. There are plenty of super pragmatic, atheistic queer people. So, you know, maybe watch your assumptions. And don't necessarily make assumptions about who is or is not going to be on your level with talking about these things based solely on how they look. We need to welcome and celebrate fat witches, black witches, who may or may not practice an African traditional religion. You know, that let's not pigeonhole people either. Just recognize that witchcraft is available for everybody. And while not every practice may be available for everybody, magic is. And we should not assume that one way of practicing is necessarily better or more right than any other. So I think I've said most of what I have to say on this. Just the major points I want to recap. Again, if you are taking some kind of class or buying materials, if you have a choice, especially with taking classes, it's really important that you're getting the information from a source that is trustworthy and connected. But if you are, when you're buying supplies, I know it can get a little tricky. It's hard to have ethical consumption under capitalism. It really is. It doesn't mean we shouldn't try, but it's difficult. So, you know, no shame if you're buying your tools from the bodega, from the supermarket. But when you can, especially if you're using tools for specific rituals, for specific practices, try to get them from the people who make them. Try to get things by people who are selling them for the use by others. And listen if someone tells you that the way you're practicing or the way you're speaking is offensive. Listen, sit with it. If they want to have a conversation with you about it, have it. If they don't want to educate you, go try to educate yourself. I'm big on education personally. I would rather explain something to someone than have them go and pick up some nonsense information. But you also can't expect someone who might actively be being hurt by what you're doing to educate you. So do some research. Honestly, a great place to start your research is Wikipedia. You can't take everything on there as gospel, but every Wikipedia page, or you know, most of them, some of the smaller and more niche ones don't, but Wikipedia pages tend to have resources on the bottom, sources for where the information in the wiki came from. Go to those sources. See who wrote those sources. See if they're doing their research from an anthropological perspective and they're outsiders looking in, or see if they're actually writing about their own practices. You know, do some research. Again, if you can find someone who's willing to educate you, that's great. And you should thank them for their time and not get defensive. And you can do that. But not everyone is going to have the energy to do that. Also consider that unless someone is like outright being aggressive and rude when they're calling you out, they're probably telling you because they feel like you want to know. They probably feel like, hey, this is a person who seems to care. I'm going to tell them and hopefully they can, you know, see why what they're doing is wrong or hurtful or whatever and change because I think that they're capable of it. I know for me, the point at which I stop telling people things is when I think that they're not going to listen and they're too far gone. So consider that. If someone is calling you out or calling you in, that is a sign that they want to continue to talk to you. Often, especially if it's a friend or someone in your community, like that's a big deal. If it's like some random person on the internet who is maybe telling you that you're an idiot, I don't know that I would continue a conversation with them. But like if it's like in person or private message or something, it's worth a shot. Say, hey, if you have the energy, can you explain that to me? Or can you show me a resource about it? Again, if they've initiated that conversation with you, don't just like walk up to someone or metaphorically walk up to someone and like slide into their DMs and be like, hey, can you explain this to me? There's a lot of resources out there, so try to use them. But, you know, be mindful. Use your critical thinking. Figure out who wrote it, if you can. Figure out if the source seems at all reliable, and go from there. You know, again, examine why you're practicing what you're practicing. Is it something that you were raised with and something that you grew up with and is part of your culture? Or is it something that you think just looks cool? If it is something that is not part of your culture, but that you are very strongly tied to, whether you keep getting messages that are from a particular deity or whatever the case may be, maybe you do want to totally convert. I don't know. You know, again, just really, really examine where that's coming from and go from there. But don't feel entitled to things just because you're interested in them. You can be interested, but it could still not be for you. So just be mindful of that. When you're cultivating your aesthetic, be mindful of what you're wearing or using and why. Is it because you think it looks cool and you don't even know where it came from? Is it because it's actually important to what you're doing? You know, there's a lot in chaos magic. And Jason Miller in Elements of Spellcrafting has a couple of great bits about this where you absolutely can participate in rituals that are not necessarily from your major paradigm, but you have to do so whole hog. His example is He was doing this ritual and he couldn't figure out why it wasn't working. He was following all the steps. And then he realized that I don't remember the particulars right now, but the group that he, like the religious group that he was using the ritual from, they are strict vegetarians. And he was eating eggs every morning. So when he stopped doing that, it worked better. Again, you know, for those of us who are really psychological, that's different. But I'm not, right now, us psychological witches are not my audience with that story. All right? But it's important information that should be put out there. You know, it really is complicated and in-depth. And that's why kind of just a horsing around with stuff from different cultures and different religions that may or may not belong to you is not always a solid plan. Because you don't know all of the background that makes that work. So just think about that as you're doing all of this. And finally, don't make assumptions about someone's level of witchcraft or think that you're not a good witch because you don't fit the look. There is no one look. We all look different. We all practice differently. The most important thing is to be authentic to yourself and the practices you're doing, and go from there. All right. I'm sure that there's a lot of stuff I didn't cover, and I will probably make a post on my Instagram and my Facebook with some other great sources to follow up with. But I hope this was useful. I hope this is a good kind of intro to cultural issues and witchcraft and why it's important to be respectful. We got into the acknowledgement and advertisement portion of the podcast. So thank you again to everyone who's listening. Thank you to the listener who gave me this suggestion, whoever you are. Thanks again to Ari for doing a lot of work behind the scenes to make this podcast possible. If you want to get a reading from me, my Etsy shop is still on hiatus until mid-December. But I'll be back open in the new year, so you can get a new year reading. And you can follow me on Facebook and Instagram as Antifragile Tarot. I am Antifragile Tarot on Patreon. It's two words. And that's the best way to support me and what I'm doing with this podcast. So I really have a special thanks to all of my podcast listeners and my Patreon patrons in particular. If you're hearing this the day it comes out, I am going to be at the next Jersey City Oddities Market on December 8th at Harborside Atrium in Jersey City, 12 to 6. It's going to be a great event. My friend Mike, who does Chaotic Calm Tarot, is also going to be there doing readings, so I don't have a crazy line like last time. If you're hearing this after that time, sorry. There'll be more events, I promise. And you can always email me with any questions, comments, suggestions. I am antifragiletarot@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening and for all of your support. I hope you have a witchy and or wonderful week, and I will be back in mid-December. Bye.